from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Please take a moment this weekend and thank a veteran for their service as we honor all of those servicemen and women who have given their last full measure of devotion to their country on this Memorial Day weekend. Well, a little later on in the show, we'll have one of the congressmen who is calling for a second special counsel to look into the Department of Justice and the FBI. Also, it's our annual Watchmen on the Wall conference, and we'll be joined by one of our key pastors. But first, the Center for Disease Control has released its latest report on American fertility patterns, and the U.S. fertility rate has plunged to its lowest point in four decades. Joining Tony to discuss this troubling trend is Brad Wilcox, senior fellow at the Institute for Family Studies and a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute.
Brad, good to have you back on the program. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Tony.
Brad, you shocked by these numbers that the fertility rate has dropped to about 1.76% per woman?
Yeah, you know, it's. I think it is surprising because typically when the economy is improving, we see the birth rate ticking upwards. But since 2014, the economy and the birth rate have been going in different directions. And so even though the economy has been improving since 2014, we've seen the fertility rate keep dropping. So it's kind of, you know, we're kind of in a new moment here, Tony.
And it, you mentioned the economic issues. It appears as you dive into the what's causing the decline in the fertility rate that it's not driven by economic issues.
You know, I think there may be some residual kind of worries on the part of millennials today, younger adults today, you know, about sort of their economic future, just given the Great Recession. So I think it's still part of the mix. But I think beyond that, what we're seeing is that millennials today are having more difficulty forming real relationships, dating, marrying, and then, of course, having kids. So a lot of the story here is that millennials are not dating, they're not getting married, and then, of course, they're not having kids. So that's a big part of the story that we're seeing play out, I think, here right now in America.
Now, Brad Wilcox, there's some good things in here. Number one, we're seeing that the birth rate among, you know, youngest women, it has declined. Never married women. That's the kind of, and some of those are good things. But we're seeing this with women in their 30s, which is, you know, those are the key childbearing years. And so unless they're going to get really aggressive in their 40s, we've got a long-term problem.
Yeah, no, that's right. And there's definitely good news here and bad news. And the good news is the teen pregnancy is down and nominal childbearing is down. You know, for many years, as you know, people thought that those two things couldn't be, could not be addressed in any meaningful way. But we have seen teen pregnancy come down since 1990 and since the recession. We've seen the ratio of kids born outside of marriage also decline. That's a big change in our culture. I think part of what's happening here is that younger women are being more, you know, cautious and prudent about having a baby. And that's in many ways, I think, a good thing. But the bad news, I think, here is, as you were saying, is that we're seeing dramatic declines for women in their late 20s and 30s. And, you know, those are classically prime childbearing years. And I think a lot of these young women sort of feel like they can't find, you know, the right partner or they're not dating the right person and or otherwise reluctant to get married. And I think there is a kind of a growing problem with younger adults having kind of the ability, the opportunity, and sometimes, you know, the courage to go, you know, date and find a spouse. And so that's you know, certainly part of what's happening today in America.
So, Brad, what's the downside here? I mean, we're always told we're overpopulated. I mean, if you try to get a parking spot at Walmart, it's kind of a challenge. So is a declining population, is that a problem?
Yeah, we're not going to be declining anytime soon in the U.S., given immigration. But if this pattern continues, we could see, you know, long-term declines in population. And we're also going to have a harder time kind of manning our economy, you know, so to speak. And just to give you kind of one concrete example, the Social Security trustees have this report that they put out that is sort of designed to figure out how much you have to pay into the system to keep it afloat. and their lower bound estimate for fertility in the future is 1.8. And that's not what they're expecting for. They're expecting more like 2.0 in terms of the number of babies born from an average. But right now we're at 1.76, and I think we're going to go lower than that in the future. So this kind of trend is going to put real pressure on, you know, on the workforce and on the public purse, because we're not going to have enough people in the workplace. We're not going to have enough taxpayers. And then I think more fundamentally, it's going to, there are going to be questions about, you know, are women having the kids that they wanted to have? Are grandparents having the grandchildren that they wanted to have? You know, these more kind of fundamental family questions are, of course, also very important too.
Right, the non-tangible. I mean, you can't put a price tag on having a family,
exactly,
and leaving a legacy. These are critical things, and then there's a policy aspect. Our policy should be encouraging marriage, childbearing, because that is, in fact, the future health of our country depends on that.
Right, and that's why the debate that we had, you know, a number of months ago about the child tax credit with Marco Rubio and his colleagues was, I think, important, and why, you know, we can do hopefully more in the future to make, you know, make family life a bit more affordable by having, you know, the U.S. Congress do more to recognize that families are really, you know, they're producing the future citizens, the future employees, the future employers, future taxpayers, you know, this country, and as such, you know, they should have a little bit more leeway to, you know, keep the dollars that they earn in the family so they can support their kids as they raise the next generation.
It's our future. Brad Wilcox, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on today, Tony. Appreciate it.
If you want to find out more about Brad Wilcox, head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air by going to TonyPerkins.com and making a contribution. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with one of the founding members of the Freedom Caucus.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. A group of House Republicans called Tuesday for the appointment of a second special counsel to investigate concerns about the Department of Justice and the FBI. Joining Tony to discuss the issue is Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan.
Congressman Jim Jordan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, good to be with you.
I know you're in a committee and you just stepped out. I appreciate you joining us. You were one of those yesterday calling for this second special counsel.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, Jeff Sessions just said you need extraordinary circumstances to name a special counsel. Well, how about this fact pattern? Director Comey's been fired. Deputy Director McCabe has been fired, lied three times under oath, according to the Inspector General. General Counsel at the FBI, Jim Baker, has been demoted, reassigned. Deputy Director of Counterintelligence, Peter Strzok, demoted, reassigned. Lisa Page, FBI Counsel, demoted, reassigned. Why did these five people, why were they fired, demoted, or reassigned? Because they're the people who, what did they do? They ran the Clinton investigation, and they launched the Trump-Russia investigation. They're the people who took the dossier to the secret court to get the secret warrant. They're the people who maybe were involved in what we now looks like a some kind of informant. So all this, if that's not extraordinary, somebody tell me what is. So we've called for this a number of months ago. We are reiterating our call with the resolution that Mr. Zeldin introduced.
All right. What has been the response thus far? And I know that this is not the first time for the call of a second special counsel. But now with this information coming from the New York Times and others that there was this informant, the president himself saying, hey, I want this investigated.
Sure.
Is there a receptivity to this call for a second special counsel?
Heck yeah. You've got three committee chairmen in Congress who've said we need a special counsel. You've got the majority leader, the majority whip, who said we need a special counsel. We first called for it 10 months ago, and in that 10-month time period, we have learned all kinds of troubling things, like the fact they took a dossier, this disproven salacious document, took it to a court, didn't tell the court who paid for it, didn't tell the court that the guy who wrote it, Christopher Steele, had been fired by the FBI because he was leaking information, leaking the fact that he's working for the FBI, something you don't do. They didn't tell the court those two critical facts. Now, Tony, you and I go to court. We have to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The FBI should have to do the same thing. And now the Justice Department says, look, don't worry, though, Congress. Don't worry. We can investigate ourselves. Even though we did that, even though they've tried to hide information from us, we've caught them doing that, redacting information on some of the Lisa Page, Peter Strzok text messages that they should not have redacted. Even though all that, they say, don't worry, we can investigate ourselves. We don't need a special counsel. And we're saying baloney. The American people have the right to know the answer to this. We need a special counsel to get those answers, and that's what we're calling for.
I mean, I think every American should be troubled by this, because what this essentially is that you had a rogue operation, a politically motivated operation, I'm not sure which, within the Department of Justice, going to the secret court with a manufactured document to get these warrants, and there's no oversight because it's a secret court. Or limited oversight. Certainly the American people don't have oversight. Congress doesn't have oversight. So, I mean, this is about bringing daylight to what could be a very troubling, not just an incident, but this could be systemic within the Department of Justice, which I think it is.
Transparency is a good thing. That's what the president's been calling for. That's what we've been calling for. We have this amazing thing in our great constitutional form of government, separate and equal branches of government. The legislative branch has a right to see. So we have a right to get the information that allows us to do our constitutional oversight duties. And that's what we're asking for. The Department of Justice has been tough. They're always dragging their feet. It's always like pulling teeth. And that's a problem. So at some point, you got to say, look, we're tired of the runaround. We're tired of it. We want this information. But if you're not going to give it to us, we want a special counsel who can go get subpoenas, who can go in front of a grand jury, who can do all those things and get the information that we need to get answers.
I've had some conversations with some of the political appointees at the Department of Justice, and they've expressed concerns about that the mechanism over there is it's like it has a life of its own, uncontrolled by the president's own political appointees.
It's not supposed to be that way.
And
no, it's not supposed to work that way. And go back to the first one, the names I mentioned. James Comey's name wasn't on a ballot. He was confirmed. He had a 10-year thing, but he's been fired. Deputy Director Andrew McCabe's name was never on a ballot. He's been fired. He lied three times under oath, according to the Inspector General's report. FBI General Counsel Jim Baker demoted, reassigned. Why? We don't know why. Why doesn't Justice Department tell us that? Why'd you demote Jim Baker? Why was he removed as FBI Counsel, General Counsel? Peter Strzok demoted, reassigned. We know why that happened. We saw that in the text messages. Same with Lisa Page. So these are the five people, the key people who ran the entire Clinton investigation. These are the key people who launched the Trump-Russia investigation. These are the people who put together who took this dossier to the FISA court. And we don't know how much, but maybe they were involved with this possible informant that we've heard about, who was talking with folks associated on the periphery of the Trump campaign. So that happens. And never forget the one text message too, Tony. September 2nd, 2016, between a text message between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, where they say, POTUS, President of the United States, President Obama, POTUS wants to know everything we're doing. And the operative word there is everything. Now, what did that refer to? We don't know, but that's why we need to document.
Well, it probably wasn't their personal relationship that they had going on.
Yeah, well, I don't ever talk about that, but what I do know is they talked about an insurance policy. They talked about the President of the United States wants to know everything we're doing. They had this animus towards President Trump where they said he should lose $100 million to zero. That's what I do talk about. And then they were actually picked for the Mueller team. So all this happened. We need the documents so we can actually bring in these people. I want to depose Lisa Page. I think that's important. But it'd be nice if you had all the information ahead of time so you could ask the right questions and get the answers for the American people.
Well, Congressman Jordan, I think this is critical, given the fact that even those at the Department of Justice have concerns that this thing, it's a life, it has a life of its own. It's mm-hmm. uncontrollable, and mm-hmm. Congress has a responsibility for the oversight. And I think that's the only way we're going to get to the truth, because the Attorney General, and I'm not going to debate the merits of whether or not he made the right decision to recuse himself or not. Obviously, the president is not happy that he did, but he did. And I think that's the problem, is that he is not in control of what's happening at the Department of Justice as it pertains to this special mm-hmm. counsel and the investigation.
Yep. Yep. No, I think that's been a concern from the get-go. We need the special counsel. I don't like special counsel. Who does? But I don't see any other remedy. I don't think the Department of Justice can investigate themselves. I don't think the FBI can investigate themselves. The Inspector General has done good work, but he doesn't have the prosecution authority and power that the special counsel would or a U.S. attorney would. So, you know, I just don't see another remedy, and I see the fact pattern that exists here as warning a second special counsel.
Has the president weighed in on this call for a second special counsel?
No, I don't think he's weighed in specifically. Obviously, he's concerned. He wants transparency for the American people. Here's one other issue I think is important that the Department of Justice will not show us. Rod Rosenstein wrote a memo on May 17th of last year outlining the parameters of Special Counsel Mueller's investigation into the Trump-Russia issue. That there was an addendum to that memorandum on August 2nd of last year. We didn't learn about that memorandum, that addendum, until a few weeks back. And when we learned about it, it was made public, but most of it was redacted. 70% is blacked out. Just the part dealing with Paul Manafort was actually public. And Mr. Meadows and I sent a letter to the Attorney General, to Rod Rosenstein. We want to see that, because we think the American people have a right to know the full parameters of an investigation into the president they elected. We're waiting for that documentary.
Well, for one, we appreciate the work that you and the Freedom Caucus and the other conservative members of Congress are doing to try to bring clarity to this issue and make sure the Department of Justice is operating with justice. Jim Jordan, thanks so much for joining us.
You bet, Tony. Take care.
If you want to find out more about Congressman Jim Jordan, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with an inspiring story of how FRC helps pastors in need.
Hello, can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Back in February, we talked about a church in Michigan who was under attack from the left for offering a workshop for teenage girls who are struggling with their sexual identity. That workshop created a firestorm for Metro City Church, and Pastor Jeremy Chasseau, winner of this year's Watchman on the Wall Award, along with FRC's National Field Director for Church Ministries, Randy Wilson, joined Tony on Thursday.
We were having this conversation, and I want to kind of pick up where we left off, Pastor Jeremy. You've been doing this workshop called Unashamed Identity, helping girls who are struggling with their sexual identity. You've been doing that for a number of years, but then all of a sudden, this time was different.
Yeah, we put it out on Facebook more internally for our church, and then a very, very large anti-God, pro-gay website picked it up, or Facebook page picked it up, and literally just made a very simple statement. They linked to the little advertisement and said, "This guy is evil. Let him know how bad he is." And that was it. And then from then on out, we had literally thousands upon thousands upon thousands of emails, messages, phone calls. At one point, we were getting we timed it, we got 42 hate messages a minute. every minute. We could not hit delete fast enough. It was crazy.
And these weren't just messages saying, we disagree with you, we think you are a bad guy.
No, they were vilifying our church, my family, threatened things to my wife, my kids. It was just bizarre. Like, we didn't even know where it was coming from. It was all over the world. It was really a coordinated effort.
And you felt kind of alone.
We did. For the first 5 or 6 days, it was like our church was spinning. We're a fairly large church, and we're going, what is going on here? And we felt utterly alone. And then Randy calls and says, I'm from the Family Research Council. Have you heard of us? I'm like, yeah, I've heard of you guys. You guys are great, you know. And he says, well, we want to come and stand with you and let you know that you're not alone, that there are pastors and an organization out there that loves you and loves what you're doing, and that we realize you're not being hateful, that you're just lovingly standing for the truth. And so Randy made a trip to Michigan, and our whole church was so grateful and really big boost, huge.
Spirit of the Church was incredible. What a privilege to come up and stand with you. You gave me some time in front of the body there, and the Spirit confirms with Spirit, right? This was so right. And Tony, this follows your mission and vision and passion to stand with the pastors, and it follows your promise that you have made to pastors. If anyone stands for truth and gets railroaded, attacked, you will stand with them. And so this follows with our mission to champion pastors, to transform America. So this is why we, Family Research Council, Watchmen on the Wall, showed up at your facility to stand with you and encourage you and say you're not alone. In fact, there's us and there's many more standing with you.
Yeah, and it wasn't just you, of course. It was your whole team, and your research people sent me so much great information. I was able to get that out to the media and to our church people. Our people were wondering, what are we doing with this? You know, what should we know? What should we do? And you guys provided all that stuff.
Well, we didn't just stand there and take it. No, we went on the offense, right?
For sure.
We pulled the team together. We went to Lansing, Michigan, and we called a press conference. Yeah. And we put the word out there. And we called these representatives on the carpet and said, back off. You pull that letter demanding the Attorney General investigate this church, because you're reaching over that line of separation in church and state. Yeah. And so we got to go on the offense. We just can't stand there and take it. I know we're called to turn the other cheek, but we got to understand what Jesus was saying truly there. And in this day and time, the enemy is seeking to kill, steal, and destroy. We must stand up with the courage of God, according to his word, stand for righteousness and truth. But as you bring, Jeremy, and what I saw in your church, you bring then the love in a great way that encourages them to come. And that's what I loved about being with you at your church and what I heard and saw there.
Love without truth is not love, and truth without love is not truth. Right. They must go together. And you can do that in the world. And they're going to label you as hateful, but you just got to keep plugging away and showing who you are and what you stand for.
And what a desperate need met. The gender issue today
is huge.
The gender issue truly is at the heart of the gospel.
The average parent is terrified of a conversation about gender issues. Right. Terrified of it. Yeah. And they just need somebody who's not terrified of it.
Yeah, and there's so much information that we have at Family Research Council. The search bar, put in the issue, it'll pull down everything we've written about, talked about, the panels we have held to explain the gender issue and any other issue there as well. So that's available. That's what we bring to the churches, to help people understand the truth and the research on the issues so that we can bring order to chaos.
I just want to reaffirm for any pastor or any church or any parent that wants to engage this, if you don't engage it, the world will.
Oh, absolutely.
Their schools are filled with pro-gay counselors that want their kids or your kids to experiment with anything and everything. And friends, you know, just like drugs, once you go down that road of experimentation, it is downhill fast.
We've got to be strong and courageous.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. As already stated, we are at the 15th Annual Watchman on the Wall Pastors Briefing here in Washington, D.C. Randy Wilson, my guest here, National Field Director for Church Ministries here at the Family Research Council, and Pastor Jerry Shasho, who is the pastor of Metro Church in Michigan. You know, Jeremy, there's probably some pastors out there saying, you know, I don't need that. I'm not going to get involved in these issues. I'm just not going to touch it.
This found you.
Yeah. The only way not to touch this issue of sexuality is to not preach the fullness of the gospel. That's the only way. If you preach nothing, then nothing will happen. But if you ever preach the full truth of Scripture, it will find you.
If you preach the truth,
yep,
it will find you. And that's when it is good to be in fellowship with others.
Yeah.
So that you do not stand alone. And that is a commitment that we made a number of years ago here at Family Research Council, Watchmen on the Wall, that we never again in America will a pastor who stands for biblical truth, speaking it in love.
There's a difference.
There
yeah.
is a difference. And we looked at what you were doing, and I reached out to Randy and said, Randy, We need to see what's going on here and see what help we can offer. And we are committed to standing with the pastors of America because,
thank you,
as we know, the issues facing America, while we wrestle with them in the political realm, they are spiritual and moral at their core. And unless the spiritual leaders of our nation take those issues on, there is no hope for America.
Yeah. I think the culture has made moral issues political. And they are moral issues first. They are biblical issues first. And the church needs to engage.
And pastors need other pastors as well, have to encourage each other, to pray for each other, and then to stand with each other. We've got to be, Joshua 1:9, be strong and very courageous in these dark and trying days today. And we can't do it alone. We must have each other.
Yeah, this is not the age of the Lone Ranger.
No.
This is more the age of the band of brothers.
Yeah,
that's right.
Randy Wilson, so great to be with you.
Great to be.
Thanks
here
for all the work you're doing out Thank there, you. All across this nation, crisscrossing the country, standing with pastors. We appreciate all you're doing at the Family Research Council.
Thanks, Tony.
Pastor Jeremy, congratulations for being the recipient of this year's Watchman on the Wall Award. But more than that, thank you for being true to the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.